United Kingdom. Elizabeth Cavalli and I have the big story that's beginning to break, coming to light, yesterday in the congressional hearings. That is December 13th. First, let's get a little background, starting with a Fox News release from October 25th, 2017, entitled Fusion GPS Fallout, DNC, Clinton, FBI Take Heat After Bombshell That Dems Funded Trump Dossier. And from FoxNews.com, the bombshell revelation that Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democratic National Committee helped fund the controversial anti-Trump dossier last year has lawmakers and the media asking tough questions about how the dubious document was used by the highest levels of U.S. law enforcement and why Democrats, quote-unquote, lied about its origin. In the midst of a court case that threatened to reveal the dossier's funding, it emerged overnight that political consulting firm Fusion GPS was retained last year by Mark E. Elias, an attorney representing the DNC and the Clinton campaign. The firm then hired former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele to write the now infamous dossier. The Washington Post first reported on its on the connections, which were confirmed by Fox News. Not only did the Clinton campaign and DNC fund the firm through the end of October 2016, but the FBI reportedly arranged to pay Steele to proceed with intelligence gathering on Donald Trump and Russia after Trump's election. That deal was later nixed after the former intelligence officer was identified in news reports. House Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy, Republican of South Carolina, said Wednesday that his biggest questions concern to what extent the FBI relied on that document to launch the Russia probe. He said, quote, "My focus has always been whether or not the Department of Justice and the FBI relied upon an unsourced CI document to launch a counterintelligence investigation," Gowdy told Fox News, America's newsroom. He went on to say, "I want to know whether the nation's premier law enforcement agency relied on a document that looks like the National Enquirer prepared it. And if they relied upon an unsourced, unvetted document to launch a really important investigation, then I think our country is big enough to handle that truth," unquote. He noted that representatives with Fusion GPS pleaded the Fifth in a Capitol Hill appearance last week. He said, quote, "Usually people plead the Fifth when they think the answer is going to get them in trouble."
And we have to get a little more background so that you will understand what was going on yesterday in the congressional hearings. And here we have another columnist. This is Byron York, chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner. And his headline was, "After Trump Dossier Revelation, FBI is Next." And this was November 1st, 2017. Investigators looking into the Trump dossier were not surprised when news broke recently that the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC, working through the Democrats' law firm Perkins Coie, financed the, quote, "salacious and unverified," end of quote, compilation of allegations of Trump collusion with Russia in the 2016 presidential campaign. The salacious an unverified description comes from former FBI Director James Comey. There had been plenty of talk about the Democrats and Perkins Coie, so much that investigators almost assumed that was the case. But it wasn't until the Washington Post broke the story that it was confirmed. "I'm shocked," one lawmaker joked upon hearing the news. "Who could have ever guessed?" And why did the story break when it did? Credit the much maligned Devin Nunes, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Nunes has been pursuing the dossier more aggressively than anyone else, and it was his October 4th subpoena for the bank records of Fusion GPS, the opposition research firm that handled the dossier, that finally shook loose the information. But knowing that the Clinton campaign, the DNC, and Perkins Coie supported the dossier is not the end of the story. The most important next step is the FBI. Sometime in October 2016, that is at the height of the presidential campaign, Christopher Steele, the foreign agent hired by Fusion GPS to compile the Trump dossier, approached the FBI with information he had gleaned during the project. According to a February report in the Washington Post, Steele, quote, reached an agreement with the FBI a few weeks before the election for the Bureau to pay him to continue his work, end of quote. It was an astonishing turn. The nation's top federal law enforcement agency agreeing to fund an ongoing opposition research project being conducted by one of the candidates in the midst of a presidential election. Quote, the idea that the FBI and associates of the Clinton campaign would pay Mr. Steele to investigate the Republican nominee for president in the run-up to the election raises further questions about the FBI's independence from politics, as well as the Obama administration's use of law enforcement and intelligence agencies for political ends, wrote Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Charles Grassley. The dossier did not go away. Indeed, in January 2017, Comey briefed President-elect Trump and President Obama on the dossier's contents. In recent months, Nunes has been trying to force the FBI to reveal just what it did in the dossier matter. The Intel chairman issued a subpoena to the FBI on August 24th, and in the time since, not a single document has been produced to the committee. The FBI and the Justice Department have spent most of that time talking about possibly complying with this or that part of the subpoena, but so far, nothing. The same is true of Grassley's inquiries. Republican investigators had two big questions about the dossier. One was who paid for it. It was also recently revealed that the conservative publication Washington Free Beacon financed an earlier anti-Trump opposition research project with Fusion GPS. The other question was, did the FBI or other agencies use any information from the dossier as a basis for warrant requests before the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court? In other words, did, say, the FBI use the dossier's, quote, salacious and unverified, end of quote, information to make the case that the Bureau should be granted the authority to conduct intercepts? Nunes, as well as Grassley and Senate Judiciary Committee colleague Lindsey Graham, have been pushing for months for the FBI to answer that question. So far, they've gotten nothing. When the Post story broke, some journalists noted that Democrats involved in the story had been lying about their role. When I tried to report this story, Clinton campaign lawyer Mark Elias pushed back vigorously, saying, "You or your sources are wrong," tweeted the New York Times' Ken Vogel. Folks involved in funding this lied about it and with sanctimony for a year, added the Times' Maggie Haberman. Yes, they did. But the importance of the Democrats' involvement in the dossier is that it could be one step on the road to a bigger story. What did the FBI do with the dossier material? Did judges make surveillance decisions in the Trump-Russia investigation based in whole or in part on the dossier? To what degree is the salacious an unverified dossier the source of what we think we know about allegations of collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign? Again, that was Byron York writing on November 1st, 2017. And now, yesterday, on December 13th, we had the congressman, Jim Jordan, really asking a lot of hard questions. And we had the name of Mr. Peter Strzok come up, the head of counterintelligence at the FBI. And he's the one who changed that letter about Hillary's emails from gross negligence to extreme carelessness, one or the other. But at any rate, whichever it is, I guess in legalese, denotes that it wasn't as prosecutable an offense as the other. So I think that it went from extreme carelessness to the gross negligence, because the carelessness would seem more willful, I believe. And so, at any rate, he changed that, and he made a very arrogant statement. This is Peter Strzok. I can protect our country at many levels. And he made a statement that there was no way they were going to let Trump become the next president. So these things are emerging. There are emails coming out. So Jim Jordan then is talking to Rod Rosenstein, and he's telling him that he can dismiss Mueller and get a new prosecutor. And he says, you wrote the memo to dismiss Comey, but Rosenstein keeps waffling. And then Jordan kind of backs him into a corner. He says, we have all called for a second prosecutor. And there are 20 of us, 20 members of the Judiciary Committee, think we need a second special counsel. And again, Rosenstein just kind of waffles, and he says, we'll just continue basically what we're doing. And then Jordan says, did the FBI pay Christopher Steele for the dossier? Did Peter Strzok help produce the FISA warrant to spy on the Americans in the Trump campaign? And did Strzok help or prepare this FISA application? So you see, many Americans are involved in this. Do we like the idea that someone can get off scot-free in a political campaign by maybe using the FBI and to take this dossier to the FISA court and get the permission to spy on Americans? This is really a big story, and this needs to now go out everywhere. So I do hope you will tell people to check with Alex Jones's program for December 13th, and that you will tell people about this program, The Divided Kingdom. We're coming to you on LWRN.net, Liberty Works Radio Network, on Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating 11 p.m. That's LWRN.net. We are heard on WWCR, Worldwide Shortwave, the outreach there, on 4.840 megahertz shortwave, and again on the Internet there at WWCR.com. So we do want to urge you to hear that program Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going out on Global Star Communications into Europe, and we are very thankful that this year we have celebrated our sixth year with Todd Waite and Don Waite of Global Star Communications. They're really wonderful people to work with, and we all share the Christian viewpoint and the hope that we can keep America free and that we will not be under the Peter Sutherland, George Soros, UN-mandated radical Islamic invasion. And we will get to that story about the pipe bomb before long. But now, looking again at these congressional hearings yesterday, and he does need a little badge for courage, I think, Jim Jordan, then ask a few more questions, and he thinks that Peter Strzok did take the application to the FISA court. And then the idea came up in the Justice Department that the deputy head of the Russian desk had a wife getting money, and this looks like some kind of a payoff connected with this whole business. Trey Gowdy said that his constituents, when he goes home, I guess this is for Christmas vacation, are going to ask what the H is going on with conflicts of interest. And he says, let's be clear why we even have special counsel. He says, lo and behold, those who are supposed to watch for conflict of interest, they're found with conflicts of interest. And he says, we have a wife on the payroll of Fusion GPS. Rosenstein says, well, Mueller and Chris Wray and Rod Rosenstein are accountable, and they're just going to keep on. I wonder if the American public is going to be so complacent as Rosenstein about this. Roger Stone, later commenting on the Alex Jones show, said Chuck Grassley is doing well, and new emails are coming out on this Fusion dossier. And, you know, it's Stone says that Andrew McCabe is stonewalling the Intelligence Committee. We can't keep everything hidden forever. The Bible tells us that things will come out. We need very deep prayer from all of you in the divided kingdom. And we know that prayer works. Who would have ever thought that Hillary Clinton would be beaten in the election last year by Donald Trump? Almost nobody had real hope. But you see, God is still on the throne. And if you pray to him to foil the evil and to bring out the truth, we still have hope, I believe, of repentance on a wide scale here in America and a great awakening. That's what I pray for. And now we have to move to the other breaking story. And I believe that I have some of this about the Port Authority bombing suspect. And this is Fox News. He rode the subway with pipe bomb, family in Bangladesh questioned. Lou, do you have anything on it?
I don't believe I do, no.
Okay, I think I have it right here. Okay, the Bangladesh man accused of strapping a pipe bomb to his body and detonating it on a subway passageway Monday rode with the device taped to his stomach during the train ride from Brooklyn to Port Authority, sitting among strap hangers for nearly an hour before the blast, a report said. Akayed, and is it pronounced Ula or Yula?
I think it's Ula.
That's what
I
thought, Ula. A 27-year-old who lived in Brooklyn and entered the U.S. in 2011 via chain migration was the only person seriously injured when the crude device was detonated just before 7:30 a.m. in a crowded subway passageway near Port Authority. The pipe bomb was packed with explosive powder, but it didn't go off as intended when he ignited it with a Christmas light, matches, and a 9-volt battery, officials said. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio called the episode an attempted terrorist attack. And I have to interject, even these far-left liberals, they're beginning to wake up a little bit that the country they get all the benefits from that's so different from most of the countries in the world yet, due to our Christian upbringing, influence, and protection from God, they're beginning to realize they don't want their families to be living in what those off zones are in Belgium and Manchester, England. They don't really want it. And they're going to wake up more, I'm sure, as these events escalate. The article in Fox says, but just before Ula arrived in Midtown Manhattan, he took the train from his Brooklyn home, sitting next to scores of unsuspecting commuters for about an hour, the New York Daily News reported. He got on the train ready to go, a law enforcement source told the New York Daily News. And now, what do we know about him? Ula told police he chose this specific spot in the passageway after he saw a Christmas poster, the source said, adding, he said he set it off at that place and time. That's the point where he decided to do it. And Lou, we have to interject here. We are a Christian program. Does this not look like spiritual warfare to you? The demons were directing him, the demons of his misplaced philosophy.
Absolutely.
And Christmas, you see.
Yeah, because
Christ.
This is the time of the coming of Jesus Christ, so the demons are probably extra angry and want to destroy Christianity all the more when they see this good influence of Jesus Christ coming into the world. So no wonder he used, I believe you said he used, Christmas lights?
I believe so, yeah.
As part of his bomb apparatus. So,
Christmas light. Mm-hmm.
Ironic, but not unexpected.
And it's significant that he didn't really get to kill people. God put some protection on this. Ula was charged Tuesday with supporting an act of terrorism, making terroristic threats, and criminal possession of a weapon. Law enforcement officials said Monday's attack was inspired by ISIS. Oh, gee, aren't we surprised? But the article says Ula had looked at ISIS propaganda online and told investigators he was retaliating against U.S. military actions. Officials familiar with the investigation said this. He learned how to make the bomb online. He also wasn't on the radar of law enforcement officials prior to the attack. John Miller, NYPD Deputy Commissioner of Intelligence and Counterterrorism, told CBS on Tuesday. The suspect lived with his mother, sister, and two brothers and returned to Bangladesh in September to see his wife and newborn son. Law enforcement sources also told Fox News Ula had extensive overseas travel. Ula's uncle, Abdul Ahed, said the suspect mostly remained inside a small apartment in Dhaka's Hazibah area when he recently visited Bangladesh. He went out of his residence to offer prayers at a nearby mosque, Ahad told the AP. He said Ula arrived in Bangladesh on September 8th and returned to New York on October 22nd. He stayed with his wife and six-month-old baby boy, he said, adding Ula was a quiet person who rarely socialized. And Lou, again, there's an interesting contrast there, an irony, that he visited his small son. At the same time, Jesus Christ's anniversary of his birth came. And we know the difference in the ideology. When Ula's son would get a little older, they would strap the bombs on him and tell him that he can die a noble death and go to heaven. What a difference when Christians celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. They're looking for peace and love and faith, because there's no other figure in history who was God's son and who promises eternal life when all we need to do is give up our will to him and surrender, telling him we are sinners and we want his friendship the rest of our lives. We want to do his will. And then you see, life becomes so good. You and I said the other night, these are the best years of our lives, aren't they?
Yes, they really are. They're years of fulfillment and happiness.
And because we're doing what he called us to do. I told you how I saw, I believe in Isaiah, that we were to cry out. I've extrapolated that it meant us too, because I was seeking that question. How long did God want our radio work? Maybe we won't be like Dr. Stan Monteith and make it to age 84, but he was doing his broadcast that very last month of his life, and he loved that work. But we might do it a long time, because those verses showed me, cry out till the last city is wasted. And, oh, God, we pray that Rick Wiles' vision back in the 1990s in the chapel at TBN will not come true, with America burning on fire if America didn't repent. The same vision that was seen by Dimitri Dudeman. And some of you out there don't believe in any visions, but that's not biblical. Lou, there are some visions, aren't they? What are a couple of them in the Bible?
Oh, there are many, many visions. Moses, I guess you could call it a vision in a way, with the burning bush, although that might have been a little more than just a vision. And all down
through
history. How
about Daniel?
Daniel, absolutely, saw these visions of the last days that are still being fulfilled and will be fulfilled as time goes on, about the monsters with the hands of one material, head of another, and so forth.
That's right.
And the famous 70 weeks of Daniel, some of which has been fulfilled in the coming of Jesus Christ, the first appearance, and some of which will be fulfilled in the future. So time after time in the Old Testament, God revealed things through visions.
And if we believe that he's still at work in our individual lives, I've told you about a friend I had a couple decades ago, and the person turned out to have a very serious mental condition. And I had not been in touch with him for a while because of this. But one night I had a warning dream about him, and his own father was a doctor, and I was walking into the bedroom where his father and mother were. They were asleep in bed, and I shook him and woke him up, and I said, "Doctor so-and-so, your son is very ill." And he said, "Who are you?" I'm the doctor. You know, it showed the doctor's arrogance. So many doctors in the pharmacia world are like that, but there are a few good Christian ones left too. So at any rate, I then telephoned my friend, and it was very obvious he was hearing voices. He was very ill. So you see, God warned me, and then we could get some help for him. There are other dreams that I've had that actually presaged things that were going to help me personally. So I really do believe we have to be very careful. We don't want to fall into the New Age trap and think that we have spirit guides and animal guides, and we don't want to be trying to contact the dead. If there's anything that comes to us that we don't seek, and we pray about it and we test it out, I think it's possible that the cloud of witnesses who have gone before us sometimes are praying for us and encouraging us. And perhaps sometimes God shows a little sign of this. But getting back now to a little more data on EULA, this was by Caitlin Shalehorn, Fox News. DHS said EULA came to the U.S. on an F-43 visa, a preferential visa available for those with family in the U.S. who are citizens. He was considered a lawful permanent resident from Bangladesh, Holton told Fox News. Law enforcement officials said EULA was inspired by ISIS, but didn't appear to have direct contact with the group and likely acted alone. The morning of the attack, EULA posted on Facebook, "Trump, you failed to protect your nation," according to a criminal complaint. A passport found in his home included handwritten notes, the complaint said, including, "Oh, America, die in your rage." EULA was a licensed cab driver from March 2012 to March 2015. The New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission confirmed to Fox News. His TLC for hire vehicle driver's license was not renewed after 2015. The TLC spokesperson did not confirm whether he drove for any particular base or whether he simply got the license but didn't drive at all. He did say EULA was not licensed to drive a yellow taxi. And I think there's just a little bit more here we want to bring out from this. The suspect allegedly packed a metal pipe bomb and battery pack into the right side of his jacket, according to a criminal complaint filed in the Southern District of New York. The complaint said EULA made the bomb at his Brooklyn home. Investigators found other bomb-making materials in the residence. And now, as a follow-up to this, we are tracking all of these things about radical Islam, and Attorney General Sessions said, "Terror attacks show immigration a security issue." This is another headline from Fox. Speaking at a news conference at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Baltimore, Sessions said two terrorist incidents in New York in the last 2 months were each carried out by men who were in the U.S. as a result of failed immigration policies. And we really do applaud Jeff Sessions for his stance on immigration, but we're all wondering, why has he gone soft on getting a second prosecutor and stepping up the investigations into the Clinton misconduct? The question arose with Roger Stone and Alex Jones. Was he blackmailed? Is he now compromised? What is going on? It's a strange world, but we must know the background of what has been infiltrated with the Muslim Brotherhood. Lou, you have a very important article.
Yes. And this is entitled, "Is the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria ISIS Stupid?" This is by, I believe it's pronounced, Kaleigh Nelson. And at the introduction it says, a quote from Robert Spencer from the Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS, quote, "Al-Qaeda is simply an especially virulent outgrowth of Wahhabism, and ISIS is just an especially virulent outgrowth of Al-Qaeda." Another quote from the same source, The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS by Robert Spencer, says, "Yet despite all this and more, most Americans know very little about ISIS. And that's not just Americans who know what they know about world affairs from watching network news shows. Even the nation's highest authorities and our intelligence apparatus have shown that they know very little about the Islamic State." Now, getting to the main article, despite three previous New York terrorist attacks, Despite 9/11, it didn't take long for CNN to blame this latest attack on President Trump. They reasoned that because he said the capital of Israel is Jerusalem, and that's where the American embassy belongs, that this has inflamed Islamists to these reactions. And this never would have happened if President Trump's chain migration policy had been in place. Bomber immediately identified as terrorist. The bomber, a Bangladeshi immigrant living in Brooklyn, has been identified as 27-year-old Kayed Ullah. He strapped a pipe bomb to himself and set it off in a New York City subway. Police are saying it was, quote, absolutely an attempted terrorist act, unquote. The New York Police Department said Ullah has been living here for 7 years, and this was definitely a terrorist attack inspired by ISIS. He was walking in one of the tunnels underneath New York City's Port Authority, the Port Authority station, when the bomb apparently malfunctioned and went off. Fortunately, the explosion was small and the bomber was injured, but police captured him alive at the scene. He had wires attached to him and a 5-inch metal pipe bomb and battery pack strapped to his midsection as he walked through the Manhattan Transit Hub. Investigators briefly spoke to the alleged bomber, who told them he made the explosive device at the electrical company where he works. 3 other people were slightly injured when the bomb went off. They were taken to local hospitals, treated, and released. One person was seriously injured and is in Bellevue Hospital. The morning traffic jams in one of the busiest places in our country was unbelievable. All MTA trains were bypassing Port Authority, 42nd Street, as police investigated the incident. All New Jersey transit buses were not stopping at Port Authority. The New York Waterway was also running extra ferries. Of course, Google has chosen to censor that ISIS was involved in this terrorist attack. FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force investigates. And the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force also is investigating the incident. Well, happy days. The FBI is in on the investigation. And we know that in February of 2012, former FBI Director Robert Mueller helped to purge hundreds of counterterrorism training documents after a month-long review found inaccuracies and other problems in their descriptions of Muslims. The review was triggered after a September blog in Wired magazine revealed training documents that reportedly called the Prophet Muhammad a, quote, cult leader, unquote. Claimed, quote, devout, quote, unquote, Muslims have been generally violent for hundreds of years, and made other controversial statements. President Obama wouldn't want the truth taught to FBI agents, and of course, Director Mueller followed these obscene orders. And don't forget what Homeland Security Officer Philip Haney told us in his book, See Something, Say Nothing. He did all within his power to protect America from the internal and external threats from jihad. He thoroughly documented the government's lack of willingness to protect the nation from a deliberate... Excuse me just one second. A deliberate, explicit, and strategic attack from within our borders. The Department of Homeland Security under President Obama required Haney to scrub records of Muslims with terrorist ties. And next we have a section entitled Muslim Brotherhood Operatives. Remember what former FBI agent John Guandolo said, quote, the primary Islamic advisors regarding the Islamic threat who are inside the White House, State Department, CIA, FBI, DHS, National Security Staffs, and others are Muslim Brotherhood operatives.
And Lou, I have to interject for a moment. That's the same FBI agent, John Guandolo, who made the claim that Brennan, the former head of the CIA, had converted to Islam some years back. So we see these roots are very deep. Continue.
That's right. And he said they are Muslim Brotherhood operatives, or Muslims ideologically aligned with a Muslim Brotherhood, unquote. And John clarified that the average FBI agent hasn't any training in how to question Islamic suspects using Sharia, which Muslims would understand. The hired Islamists within the DOJ are ones who do the translating and complaining. In 1998, Guandolo was with the FBI investigating the Nairobi bombing of the U.S. Embassy. He also worked 9/11 and related al-Qaeda cases out of the Bureau's Washington field office. And after 9/11, John began an assignment to the counterterrorism division of the FBI's Washington field office, developing an expertise in the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic doctrine, the global Islamic movement, and terrorist organizations including Hamas, al-Qaeda, and others. John was designated a, quote, subject matter expert, unquote, in 2006 by FBI headquarters, and created and implemented the FBI's first counterterrorism training program focused on the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic doctrine, and the global Islamic movement. He knows the workings of the Department of Justice, especially the FBI, and his website is understandingthethreat.com, all one word, understandingthethreat.com. Called the deadliest mass shooting committed by an individual in the United States. Oh, I missed a title there. What about Las Vegas? Called the deadliest mass shooting committed by an individual in the United States, 58 people were murdered while attending a concert below the Mandalay Bay Hotel where the shooter, Stephen Paddock, allegedly had two rooms. There are far too many questions related to this horrible Las Vegas attack, but one thing remains clear. John Guandolo clarified why the conclusion must be that the Islamic State was responsible. And these are his points. Last spring, the Islamic State identified Las Vegas as a target by using video imagery of blood over the city. Then in September, they issued another threat against Las Vegas. They reaffirmed the target shortly before the attack and told Muslims to stay away from large events where there were thousands of non-Muslims. On Monday after the attack, ISIS claimed responsibility. Later Monday, ISIS issued another statement claiming Stephen Paddock was a soldier of the caliphate and a martyr for the cause. On Tuesday morning, ISIS issued a third message, again confirming they were responsible for the Vegas attack. On Thursday, October 5th, after four major releases, including an online graphic only used for ISIS operations, they released a video showing a blood smear over the Mandalay Bay Hotel. They claimed Paddock had been converted 6 months earlier. ISIS has claimed dozens and dozens of attacks, and all have been true. The Las Vegas attack has disappeared from media. The families of lost loved ones still do not know what really happened or why. There are way too many questions that will never be answered by FBI investigators who said they found, quote, no connection with an international terrorist group, unquote. Next section, California burning. All it takes is a match. A magazine published by members of al-Qaeda called for Western Muslims to wage war within the United States, urging them to engage in lone wolf attacks, including setting forest fires. According to ABC News, a May 2012 issue of Inspire magazine surfaced on jihadi forums with one article titled, quote, "It is of your freedom to ignite a firebomb," unquote, which gives detailed instructions on how to build an, quote, ember, E-M-B-E-R, ember bomb, in a forest in the United States, and suggested Montana as a choice location due to the rapid population growth in forested areas. California is dry as a desert bone right now, and forest fires are burning all over the southern part of the state. Is ISIS involved? It very well could be. Conclusions. Do I believe the intelligence community knows what they're doing regarding Islamist terrorism? I do not. Do I believe our president has people knowledgeable of this threat in his administration? I do not. Do I believe we're safe from future attacks? I do not. Do I believe Islam is a peaceful religion? No. Do I believe the Islamic goal is Islamization of America? I do. Do I believe stealth jihad is the plan to overtake our country? I do. Do I believe there are voices of concern who are being heard? Very few. The one person who knew the dangers and how to solve them was destroyed by the intelligence community and by globalist establishment insiders. We need him back, and you all know who he is.
And we do know that would be General Flynn. That was an excellent News with Views article, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, very, very important. You know, after all of this important, serious, worrying stuff, I think we will move to something a little different. Before all the accusations broke, I opened my InStyle magazine, thinking I'd see some gold glittery sandals and rich velvet holiday gowns. But lo and behold, what did I see? No tiny man with a reindeer. No, it was a series of goofy pictures and text from former Vice President Joe Biden. The most dignified portrait shows him in a black motorcycle jacket, trying to be Fonzie, sitting sockless in his jeans, in his hip jeans, as he leans back in his Madison Avenue upscale chair. The next picture shows a close-up view as Joe clutches with both hands the bill of his blue Delaware cap. He has his eyes closed and an expression of studied angst on his face. The caption reads, "On running for president, I think what people are looking for most, and I hope I have it, is authenticity." Quoting the text from editor Laura Brown's interview, we get a few more nuggets. "We wade into shallower territory. How many hugs has Biden given and received over his 75 years? Oh, God," he hoots. "Jill sometimes tells me I'm too touchy and feely with men and women." In the book, Biden also writes about his 2008 decision, encouraged by Jill, to accept Barack Obama's offer to be his vice presidential running mate. When Biden told her, "I've never had a boss. How am I going to handle this?" she replied, "Come on, Joe, grow up." Little character portrait there. Alex Jones has talked about the video that supposedly shows him actually clutching the breast of a journalist who made harassment accusations against him as she was sleeping there on an airplane flight returning back. His hand is right there on her breast. Alex Jones's program has also mentioned that there are allegations of being too close to children, touching them too much, too. These homey interview quotes you see in InStyle magazine were, needless to say, printed before this journalist exposed that allegation about the harassment. Now that Al Franken is gone and Matt Lauer and Roy Moore are deposed, but you know there's a little bit of a bad taste there with Roy Moore when we hear that the election results, they got permission to remove them right away, the voting results, remove them digitally right away. Something smells horrible, Lou. It smells like the election was stolen. But again, you know, if those reports of him many years ago were true, it was inappropriate behavior, and God would not protect him, is my opinion. He might take down the he might try to put the Ten Commandments back, okay? But if he isn't following them himself, God does not protect you unless you have your life purified. And that means you get rid of stuff. I know, Lou, you were watching some stuff that a lot of men are addicted to in this country. You were watching some of this and looking at some magazines. And in the year, I think maybe 2005, you told me later that around Thanksgiving of that year, God began to work in your heart that you didn't have peace about this, that this wasn't a good thing, that he wanted that out of your life. And very interestingly, in December of that year is when we got the offer to go on the radio. So you see, God blesses you. And I certainly have told on the air here how in earlier days when I was at in graduate school, how I was having a little evening get-together with someone, and I guess the old term would be like petting, where people were kind of getting a little close, but not really, you know, going into total sin. But I didn't feel good about what I was doing, and my friends had said, "This is a bad guy. You should never even be alone with him." And the next day, I left, and I drove by, and I saw him standing there. I thought, "I'll never have to think about you again." And about a year or two later, in another state, my father and mother had a little business that they were doing, and they were at the state fair. And here came this guy, and he asked for me by name. He said, oh, because they had their name. And I was always impressed by that, because it was like God maybe having a little sense of humor, but saying, you don't get away with anything. You don't hide anything. Isn't that right, Lou?
Yes, that's right. God knows all.
And I would ask you, are you a happier person since you surrendered that sin to the Lord?
Yes, that's taken away a great deal of inattention. I feel peaceful about it now.
And, you know, you have many more rewards. You got a better job. You've influenced the lives of many children. So, you know, if there are people out there, we've heard that I think maybe it's 40% of the pastors in America are watching porn. And I think Rick Wiles' son developed a ministry, actually, to help men. So, you know, if you're in some kind of a bondage, whatever it is, God can bring you out of it. And we are so sorry about the people addicted to the heroin. The sad part is that the changes in their brains never do reverse for about 2 to 3 years. So this is just a terrible thing. And we really want the churches to do more to keep children, to keep the youth in a meaningful life so that they won't turn to the drugs. But at any rate, going on here, these people who are gone, Matt Lauer, Al Franken, Kevin Spacey, you know, even good old Garrison Keillor. And Lou, you and I, we went our days before radio work when we were dirt poor. We liked one of his little, it was maybe a monologue or a little playlet that he had on Prairie Home Companion, where this couple, they were riding the rims. So you and I would always say laughingly, we're riding the rims. And we saw him one time at the Baltimore Symphony, and we enjoyed it. But you know, Lou, I always had my suspicions. Why in the name of heavens, America, did he wear red socks? We really wondered. So it was kind of sad that he had a little Thanksgiving thing that he wrote, and this is right before the expose on him came out, and part of this was, he said, I give thanks most thankfully. I'm a fraud, a fake, a big mistake, a creep. I'm over a barrel, but I care a lot for Meryl Streep. This is my message for today. If you find a good partner, you are pretty much set for life. And now here you are, looking at each other across the table. Be happy. The Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, and Trump will soon fade away. But thank God we're living. Cling to your sweetie, draw up a treaty, and happy Thanksgiving Day. A lot of people have this pride before the fall, and things happen. And it was shocking to me that far leftist Susan Estrich actually had a little attack of sanity. And what she said in her column November 6th was treatment for what? As for sex addiction, which I'm not even sure is a thing, whatever it might be, it is not the abuse of people over whom you have power. It is not the use of that power to force people, men or women, young or old, to relinquish their autonomy. That's not a problem with sex. So what kind of treatment is Spacey, that's Kevin Spacey, getting? What kind of treatment are some of these other men supposedly getting or not getting? And why should we care? He's not going to get better. Maybe he will control himself in the future. More likely, he will have fewer opportunities to be out of control because he will have less power. But the larger question is whether this burst of outrage, this sheer volume of Me Toos from women of every age, race, and background, will mark a real change or just another flash in the pan, an Anita Hill moment that gives way to decades of abuse. I'm not holding my breath. And when we saw that Time Magazine even has the Person of the Year, these five women, including Ashley Judd and some others, they were a substitute for Donald Trump, it's implied strongly, because he was told that it was probable he would be selected as Man of the Year, so he turned them down. He turned the interview down. So instead, they had these women who have been whistleblowers about sex harassment. That was Ashley Judd, Susan Fowler, Adama, I really am not sure how to pronounce that, Boone, Taylor Swift, and Isabel Pascual. And the new editor, Edward Felsen, stated in the article, It became a hashtag, a movement, a reckoning, but it began, as great social change nearly always does, with individual acts of caring. Huh? Where was Juanita Broderick and all the other Clinton ladies? Where were they? I guess once again, Lou, we have to quote Orwell's Animal Farm. All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. And now, let's get a little political satire, Lou, from our favorite Eastern Shore cartoonist and columnist, Rick Collinger. His first piece appeared the day before Thanksgiving 2017. The second seasonal poem appeared in the Eastern Star Democrat Sunday, December 10th.
Yes, Elizabeth.
And I believe there's a cartoon there.
Describe that quickly. Well, it looks like maybe a Capitol-type building, maybe the U.S. Capitol, a similar building. And it says, and they have a man on a ladder who's putting numbers up on some side of a billboard. And the billboard reads, over, and it looks like it's going to be 30-something days without a sexual harassment charge. And somebody on the ground says, hold on a minute. And the article is entitled, A Thriller on Capitol Hill. And he's quoting Fats Domino. A little paraphrase, I found my thriller on Capitol Hill, sort of. Those boys on Capitol Hill just won't act right. They were either caught in scams trying to take money for votes from Arabs, or they're stealing from the government post office, or putting their mistresses on the payroll, or being involved in insider trading or something. Being an elected official these days is like being a member of organized crime without the organization part. The scandal du jour is sexual harassment. I know this because it's constantly in the news. Of course, half of it is people in the media are also committing the crime. From Bill O'Reilly to Roger Ailes to Mark Halperin to Harvey Weinstein, now numbering 91, to Ben Affleck to Kevin Spacey. Even NPR's Senior Vice President for News, Michael Oreskes, had to resign over charges of sexual harassment. This was done, however, in perfectly modulated tones and went quickly on to the sex life of the dung beetle in North Africa. Senator Bob Packwood had to resign many years ago for sexual harassment for basically drunken, boorish behavior. Wilbur Mills chose not to seek re-election from frolicking with stripper Fanny Fox in the Tidal Basin. This was back when harass was pronounced Harris, and not Harass, as it is now. The charges against Packwood were led by feminists like Maryland Senator Barbara Mikulski, who pointed out that men in positions of power could not exert their power over women. She and many others reversed their views when President Bill Clinton had an affair with an intern. She and others on the left also stood by and allowed the trashing of Clinton's other numerous accusers. This became the Clinton defense. And that's in quotes, Clinton defense. Part one, I didn't do nothing. Two, everybody does it. And three, she's a slut. When it became clear that he was lying, this changed to, it's only sex. Get over it. Somehow, this then transformed into the Republicans' war on women. Unfortunately for the Clintons, Harvey Weinstein was a huge financial supporter of theirs, and they were linked to the point that people began to re-examine old Bill's actions. They weren't helped by the fact that Hillary's chief of staff's wife was married to serial sexter, former Congressman Anthony Weiner. Weiner's defense was unique in that while he admitted to sexting an underage girl, he pointed out that 19 other women he was sexting were of age. He's currently in prison, where he's being treated for his sex addiction. The excuses for bad behavior are, I think, getting stranger. It used to be that the accused would admit to being drunk, resign, and then go somewhere to sober up. This is no longer the case, as Weinstein, Weiner, and Tiger Woods all sought treatment for sex addiction. Kevin Spacey blamed his behavior on being drunk and gay. This was eerily similar to former First District Congressman Bob Bowen. By the way, from my home state, or what is now our home state of Maryland. And Bob Bowen admitted to twin compulsions. That's in quotes. Roy Moore, the erstwhile Senate candidate from Alabama, said that he would ask the underage girls' mothers if it was okay to date them. this must be an Alabama thing. L. Franken said he thought grabbing a woman's breast was, quote-unquote, funny. There may be some credibility to this, since nothing he ever did on Saturday Night Live was funny either. I have two solutions for this, Lorena Bobbitt, and two indulgences. It was recently reported that over $17 million of taxpayer money has been spent to settle around 250 sexual harassment suits, without the taxpayers knowing who's doing what to whom and how much it's costing us. This is the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, when Martin Luther posted his 95 theses on the church door. One of Luther's main complaints about the corruption of the Catholic Church was the selling of indulgences. This is where you could sell the thumb bone of St. Paul and receive 1,000 years off your time in purgatory. Problems occurred when six of St. Paul's thumbs would show up. However, instead of these congressional indiscretions costing me money, it should cost them money. So your first sexual harassment charge should cost $1 million, with additional costs for each lame excuse used to explain away your behavior. Each additional charge would double the price. You don't have to resign. That should be left up to your constituents. All you can choose option one. That was Lorena Bobbitt.
I wonder if we'll have time for his Christmas poem. Start it, Lou.
Okay. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all over the hill, congressmen were scrambling like a Chinese fire drill. Stockings were emptied from within desk drawers in hopes that their fate wouldn't mirror Roy Moore's. The men were huddled behind pillows and chairs with visions of being caught for umpteen affairs. And Conyers in his skivvies and no other clothes must have thought this was TV. And he was Charlie Rose. When out in the mall there arose such a fuss, it was Matt Lauer being led off in handcuffs. Distraught and humbled, he remarked quite sorrowly, "I shouldn't have been so hard on Bill O'Reilly." The moon shone down, and the snow seemed to glisten. Clinton Deniers were now starting to listen. His actions were seen now for just what they were, an excuse for him, and to all women, a slur. Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to...
Oh, go on, just a few more.
A little bit more, okay. Mm-hmm. Events were unfolding, and unfolding fast. Closets were opened, and stones were being cast. There was no place to run, and no place to hide. The thing was gaining momentum. A giant earth slide. Men were in panic, longing for a day bygone, like the people who lived in Lake Wobegon, when they could do just what they wanted to do. Their hats were worn forward, and haircuts were crude. And then, out of nowhere, came a little fat man with a nose like a tater, mouth like a bedpan. "Pay off the press, give him plenty of the green," was the advice of Hollywood's Harvey Weinstein. I guess we'll have to stop it right there. But thank you for listening tonight, Elizabeth.
Yes. Tune in again next week to the Divided Kingdom. Good night.